Hey, welcome to Smartless.
Oh, really good, dude. Really original. Where'd you come up with that? Did you write that?
I figured somebody's got to kind of start it, and then something funny will come afterwards from you two. Happy to start again. Hey, welcome to Smartless.
Oh, it's the exact same thing that you did the first time.
Yeah. But I put six S's on that one.
Oh.
Hey there, listener. Welcome to Smartless. I'm your co-host, Jason Bateman, along with Canada's own Will Arnett and Wisconsin native.
Oh, fuck. I wish I could fire you from this
Wait,
job.
Still rolling. Welcome to Smartless. This is a podcast, and we
honestly, dude, just say welcome to Smartless. Here we go.
Welcome to Smartless. Here we go. Smartless. Good morning, fellas.
Good morning.
Did you have breakfast this morning? Are you breakfast guys?
I don't eat till later.
I'm getting a little tired of my oatmeal regimen, and I'm wondering what I could kind of maybe pivot to.
You have it everywhere, right? Like, no matter where you go, you take that. Like, if you and Amanda go down, let's say you were to go on vacation, you go to Mexico with the kids.
Yeah.
I'm
not taking oatmeal with
you're
me.
Not.
No.
You're not taking oatmeal across. You're not muling oatmeal across the Mexican border.
No. They got oatmeal all over the place. The problem is that, you know, I'm a little slightly gluten sensitive.
Right.
So, if they don't have gluten-free, so then I have to pivot to something different. And I'm wondering.
No, I'm telling you right now, every day, yogurt with fruit in it and grape nuts. That's what I eat.
Grape nuts.
Now, see, that would wreck my teeth.
This is what you use the time machine and you jump back to 1981, grab the grape nuts, and then came back? What a dumb usage of a time machine.
You bought a truck full of grape nuts. That's where they all went.
Wait, why do they hurt your teeth?
Because they're nuts.
Yeah, they're like crunchy ball bearings unless they've been in milk for about a day and a half.
Oh, God, like your
but
brain.
But you still eat them? What about Alpen? Do you ever eat Alpen?
No, granddad.
It's like a muesli.
God. What about a nice? Oh, you know what I found out from my doctor the other day is that eggs do not give you cholesterol. They don't.
I heard this.
Yeah, eggs are. That's
they're
a
good
whole
and bad,
wives'
good.
Tale or whatever. It's you're good to go with eggs, yolks included.
They call it a partner's tale now. Thanks very much.
A what?
They don't call it a wives' tale. They call it a partner's tale.
Oh God.
So fuck off. Okay. You know. Anyway, eggs don't give you cholesterol anymore. They used to, but they don't now.
Yeah, that's what Jason just said.
Yeah.
You don't need to re-say it. They got it.
No, I'm just saying.
But you said it like you owned it. Like you just owned that idea.
Yeah, like it was some new idea you just had.
But Jason just already said that. You said it like it was a brand new thought.
Yeah. So
we're in a four-wheel slide. We're in a four-wheel slide.
We're
leaving the highway right now.
What I know I have so many thoughts of like stuff that I wanted to say.
Oh, let's hear them.
Yeah. Well, no.
Any more partner's tales?
It's not worth it. Anyway, you know. Anyway, that's neither here nor there, but it's kind of everywhere.
Right.
And more importantly, our guest right now.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. You guys know this person. This person I once described as Hollywood's least favorite Greek.
Okay.
Just because of Jan and Clooney. And there's so many other people ahead of this person. This person, I also once asked on stage why they decided to get into show business. and he had, I can't remember his answer, but this is a person who never stops making me laugh until he does. And
I know who this is.
Who
oh
I
my
love
God.
Very much. And
I hope this is
I
who I think
hate.
It is.
I love hate, and you guys know, and America adores, even though he lives in Canada. Please give it up for the one, the only,
yay,
Mr. Zach Galifianakis.
Oh boy. What a land there.
There he is.
Look
at him. Hi, everybody. Hi, guys.
Well, I was praying that you were going to land this fish at some point. I'm a real fan, Zach. I'm just going to be quiet and fan out while these guys ask questions.
By the way, I apologize for the guest letdown, the special guest letdown. I could already see the buyer's remorse in your faces.
I thought it was going to be Jimmy the Greek. And then I was like, oh, no, I think he's dead.
No, he's canceled.
No, Zach, I don't know you probably as well as these guys do, but I do. We have met many times, and you're always so pleasant. And I've been such a fan for such a long time.
Sean, I remember meeting you for the first time. I was doing some terrible bit at Luna Park. I think I was doing something on stage where it was remember that show, The Real World?
Of course.
Sure.
I used to watch it all the time.
I used to do The Real World with just one person in it. And I performed it live on stage. It made no sense. And you were at that show and you were very nice to me after that.
That was hilarious. Wait, I have a question about you being an actor, Zach. Were you ever the type of actor who had some kind of like trajectory in mind for your career and then got sideswiped by like The Hangover or something where you go, oh, I thought I was going to do a talk show or a stand-up or a one-hour drama, but I guess I'm a movie star now?
You're a Shakespearean actor.
I mean, you're right, Bateman. I did get my start in at the London Academy of Dramatic Arts. Is that what it's called?
Yeah. And then you went on and you did The Real World two-hander
right
at Luna Park, and it all went to shit.
I played lacrosse at Juilliard.
But you didn't get spotted.
Well, no, I think Sean's onto something here. You know, listener, if you could see the tableau we're looking at, he really does look like he's doing running a nature hike business. Is this where, I mean, it looks like you're kind of living the dream. You've staked your claim to Hollywood. You have won. And then you said, guess what, honey? We're going to go ahead. We're going to buy an island, in British Columbia and just go ahead and take the victory and hit fuck it.
Well, my wife is Canadian and I've lived on and off in Canada for years, even before I knew her. And I really do like it up here. And they've kind of rejected Will. And yeah. Bateman, aren't you Canadian?
How dare you? No, I've spent time there though, and I've enjoyed it. Oh. I have enjoyed it up there.
But he does look like he's got like a backpack, and he's taking sticky BCB to weed across the border, like into Washington State.
Are you
like,
muling?
Looks like...
Is there marijuana here?
Higher, Zach. Do you put a couple more question marks in that pitch?
Is there marijuana here?
No, but you look like, I mean, you're living the dream. I'm so envious. Look at you, just not washed. The hair's super long. Mm-hmm. You're in a happy marriage, which I am enjoying here.
Some people say that I look like a Jodie Foster with a beard.
Who's been saying that? Who's been saying that?
Just mostly people online.
You mean when she was with Matthew McConaughey?
I'm always tracking my Twitter stuff.
Do you, first of all, what do you miss most? Like you did all those movies, all those Hangover movies.
Oh, I've done so many projects over the years.
So many projects. What do you miss most about not, because you're not working with Bradley anymore? Is it the paparazzi?
Mm-hmm. Well, listen, you know, it's tough to get popped all the time, isn't it?
Oh, man, those paps. Those paps with the pops.
Is the paparazzi still a thing?
No, because of COVID and the masks and everything, these guys have had to find real work.
Yeah. Huh.
Let me ask you this. So, Zach,
I liked my question before about the actor.
Well, I know. I was going to say the same thing, which was something what Sean was saying. So you come out of North Carolina, all bits aside.
Yeah, let's get serious.
What was the thing? So you moved to New York with Miles. Is that right? You moved with Miles and Bobby Tisdale. Is that how that went down? And you moved to New York to become a stand-up originally? Just a stand-up or an actor?
No, I moved to New York to try to get into acting. And, you know, you read those stories about, oh, I found this acting coach and they took me under their wing. I looked for that. I just could never find that person. I would giggle during...
But were you doing stand-up at the time?
No, I was trying to just go to acting classes. And I would do plays in churches. I mean, just low-end stuff. And then I met someone and she told me, you know, have you ever tried stand-up? Which was always in the back of my mind. And then I did it. And then I kind of got, as soon as I did it, I knew that was kind of the path that I felt most comfortable with. I mean, being from where I was from, you just didn't know how to try to figure that out. So I just moved to New York to try to figure it out.
Where are you from originally?
Paris.
Paris, great. You really worked on your accent.
Paris.
It's amazing.
I'm from Paris.
Paris, California?
Paris, Ontario.
Paris, Epcot Center.
If you go left, just when you get in.
You take a right at Barcelona and you're right at Paris.
You grab a churro and before you know it, you're in the middle of Paris. What was it about the stand-up thing where you go, this is it. This is comfy. Were you killing it or was it the opposite? Was it like crickets, but you kind of liked the terror of that?
The first time I did it, I did well. And I got I got the bug. And then the next several hundred times I did it, I didn't do that well. So I think I'd already been kind of got addicted to the high right away. And I was not having luck in the acting realm, meaning I remember acting teachers telling me this is no place for you to do your skits. Because that was one of the reviews of my acting, I remember. So, I mean, you remember Uta Hagen, the HB Studios in New York? You ever heard of HB Studios?
Yeah.
So I took, you know, classes there and didn't do well. And then stand-up just was kind of the thing. But yeah, I moved to New York with A.D. Miles and Bobby Tisdale, yeah.
So then it was the stand-up experience and that sort of flavor of comedy that you were doing there that was succeeding that you thought, oh, well, this is something I really feel comfortable with, this brand of humor, this sort of take on humor, and then taking that into your characters with acting, do you think made you overcome some of the naysayers like Uta Hagen and all of that class? Is that what gave you the confidence?
I think I realized I was more comfortable around comedic persons versus serious actor types.
Yeah, that makes sense. But like when I first met you, you were kind of, I met you through Miles and you were kind of really doing a lot of stand-up. And then like kind of, then you did the show that Jason mentioned, you did that Late World, but then you were also pretty immediately, didn't you do a 1-hour drama on Fox for a while?
Mm-hmm.
And then you kind of kept shifting, but stand-up was always something that you did. Like, they were both happening at the same time is my point. Is that right? Is that accurate?
Yeah, I mean, I got lucky because I started getting acting jobs. I mean, and I got those acting jobs not because I was a terrible auditioner, but I would always comment on the audition process while I was, because I remember when I tested for that Fox show, I remember I would write on the back of my sides. So you would flip the page, right, of the sides, and I've written on the back of the sides, I sure am doing well.
Okay, so for the listener, the sides are your pages that you hold during an audition. But wait, Zach, do you have, like, a really hilarious audition story? I mean, everybody's got one.
Well, he just told one.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I meant,
did
like,
you pass you out know, real quick?
It was just, like, a general, I thought no, maybe, no. like,
it's
a general.
It's not that funny.
Sorry, Zach.
But the first time I ever got a laugh in an audition was the first time I auditioned for a drama. And they were laughing. They were laughing at me.
Okay.
And, you know, it's one of those situations where...
Did you push through?
No. There were 17 people in the room being very judgmental, and I had to play a fighter pilot, you know, in a chair and pretend that I was fighting, you know, Top Gun style.
One hand on the yoke.
And the other hand on the script.
Yeah.
And they started giggling, and I could tell they were laughing at me. And I stopped my warfare, and I looked at them, and I said, what's so funny?
You put it on autopilot and challenged
but
them.
But I also had such a chip on my shoulder being from the South. I don't know. I kind of felt it was me against fancy people a lot of times. And I had this chip on my shoulder.
Well, and I'll bet it hasn't completely gone away to the point where, like, truly – you've won. You've taken yourself out of the rat race. You've got an enormous amount of respect and success in this community for whatever that's worth. Are you in the process of deciding what the hell you want to do with the rest of your life? Or are you happy with what you are doing as far as working when you want, on what you want, or are you basically mm-hmm. retired and you're just going to run these fishing trips?
Well, I became such a family man and I had kids a little later in life and I just fell in love with being a father, to be honest. Yeah. And I'm lucky enough to be in a position where I can focus on that. Work, as far as show business stuff, look, I've always thought I was so lucky anyway. Honestly, it's never, if it all stopped, I would still go, God, that, I got a real opportunity to work in show business that even if it went away, it wouldn't bother me because I feel so much gratitude towards being able to work anyway. So it could end and I would be fine.
Yeah, and you did it the way you wanted to do it. You were funny the way you wanted to be funny. You didn't have to like fit inside someone else's crap.
Yeah.
I mean, you've done what you wanted to do and everyone appreciates that uniqueness. I think that's just such a win.
So that's kind of what my original question was like, you don't seem like the ambitious type that's like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to go on this audition. I'm going to call this agent. I'm going to, you know, and go after it where you just kind of stay true to yourself.
You know what? He's a lot more ambitious than he lets on. Let's just
hear about the strategy.
Just be fucking clear.
I still hand out flyers at the Third Street Promenade for, you know, my headshots. And sure. And,
I have some of those. Yeah.
He does get new headshots every 3 months.
Listen, you got to keep up.
And thank you to Organic Valley for supporting the show. I'm just finishing up a little cottage cheese here. See, the thing is, I'm always on the hunt to find the best dairy products. But so many options out there. Which one do you choose? With Organic Valley, you can feel good choosing their dairy products. Their products are ethically sourced from small family farms where cows spend lots of time grazing outside on organic pasture. Organic Valley Dairy doesn't come from those big factory farms. Their farmer families are real people who care about people, animals, and nature. It just tastes better. You can taste the organic. For me, look, I'm a coffee guy, okay? Guilty as charged. Every morning, I do the same thing, which is I come downstairs, I make my coffee, and the thing that this so important ingredient is my half and half. And I just happen to choose Organic Valley half and half even before they started supporting the show. I mean, talk about a match made in dairy heaven. And I also happen to enjoy their eggs and their butter and their other products too. So I was going to say, so sue me, but so don't sue me. When you choose Organic Valley, not only will you enjoy a great tasting organic dairy, you'll help to save over 1,600 small organic family farms who are protecting over 400,000 acres of organic farmland and all the plants and animals they call it home. But do not ask me to convert that to hectares. To find Organic Valley Dairy near you, visit ov.coop.
Hey, Smartless listener, we get support from Viator. You know, Scotty and I took a vacation many years ago. We geeked out because we liked the movie Amadeus, and we went to Austria, and it was fantastic. We went to all Mozart's kind of hangout places, and I know, total nerdville, but it was pretty cool, and I absolutely loved it. It will always be one of our favorite memories of vacationing, so maybe one of the most perfect experiences we've ever had traveling. And so next time you're looking to plan the perfect trip like that, an experience, check out Viator. Viator is a tool you can use to plan and book travel experiences around the world. Their app and website make it easy to explore 300,000 plus travel experiences so you can discover what's out there no matter where you are traveling or what you are interested in. Feel better about your travel decisions by checking out real traveler reviews to get the inside scoop from others who have already checked out the experiences. Viator offers 24/7 customer service, so you know you'll get support at any hour if things aren't going as planned. Plus, free cancellation to help you plan for the unexpected. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find the perfect travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, "The bigger the ROAS, the better," over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/smartlist to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/smartlist. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Zach, you mentioned that you're talking about fatherhood, and I know that your family is super important to you, and you've, like, everything, your priorities completely shifted, like for a lot of us when we have kids, and you're no exception. And I know that you were really close to your dad. You used to tell me the funniest stories about your dad, and you guys laughed, and you would have so many. You used to talk about, Zach and I did this really great movie for Disney years ago.
G-Force.
That I tried to forget about. And the only person who reminds me of it is Zach and my son, who's 12.
My 9-year-old will remind you of it.
Yeah. This is the guinea pig one, right?
The guinea pig movie. But Zach, I remember when we were doing that, you would tell me these stories about, like, your dad coming on set, and he loved craft service. He couldn't believe.
First of all, he couldn't believe that I was, that, I mean, until just a few years ago, he still asked me, are you getting paid for what you're doing?
so he used to do that. And you, first, there were two things. One was that you guys, you and your brother used to, could make him cry really easily, mm-hmm. which I was thought was hilarious, A. And B, the other one was, what would you and your brother do? You'd go, or your brother would do, you'd go into his office when it was kind of like dead at the office.
Oh, yeah. So my dad wasn't the greatest businessman sometimes. And, you know, there, I remember just going to his office. There was not a lot of stuff going on. And my dad would be sitting there, and my brother and I would sing, "There's no business like no business." And my father would laugh so hard.
That's really funny.
He had such a great sense of humor. You know, it's interesting, too, as far as show business and your parents. My father passed away a couple years ago. And
sorry about that.
That's the other weird thing about it to me. And my dad got a kick out of me being in show business, probably more than even I did. Put it this way, guys. So I'm from a small town. My father, you know how they'll have cutouts of people in movies in the movie theater of the character or whatever, uh-huh. like a cardboard
little
cutout?
Stand-up things, yeah.
My dad took one from the local theater of me. Right? Yeah. And he stood on the corner of the street with the cutout of me waving to people as if, hey, this is my son. Guess how I found out about that? It was in my local paper.
Oh.
So he was so supportive. He was such a beautiful human being. I mean,
wow, I love that.
He cried out of beauty. Yeah. He just did. He was just the warmest human being, you know.
I love the stories that you would tell about your dad, and you would laugh, but always talk about how much he laughed. How much you and your brother made him laugh was so endearing and such a great connection. And I get that too. You know, I guess sort of later, it kind of hit my dad a little later in life, what I do and how weird it is. But I love that idea that he cut that thing out. Like that, as a father, I can relate to that. Like, I would do that to my kid for fucking sure. You know, you just love them so much. You just think like, and you don't give a shit. You know, it could seem embarrassing. You couldn't give two shits if it's embarrassing, right?
No, right.
Like, you kind of, you get it now.
I mean, the other thing about it is, when you get older too, and maybe you guys have a connection to this, man, God, we do a lot, even though we're not trying, there's something deep in our psyche sometimes. We really want to please our parents.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
That never goes away.
We really want to just, the core of me being in show business in a weird way is probably because I loved the sound of my dad's laughing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as simple as that sounds and is kind of dreamy, my dad, watching Benny Hill or All in the Family with my father and listening to those laughs. I mean, my dad would laugh at Benny Hill just like he would laugh at political comedy, mm-hmm. yeah. All in the Family. That noise that he would make, I think there was a craving for me to hear that kind of noise out of human beings for as much as I could get it. It sounds very corny, mm-hmm. but it's true.
Does the same stuff make you laugh that made him laugh? Do you guys share the same sense of humor?
My dad was very into physical comedy. The kind of dirtier stuff or the more kind of cerebral stuff, my dad wasn't much into. And so I don't know. I've got more influenced by all kinds of stuff. But my dad had a great sense of humor, and he was very, very jovial.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you wanted to make him laugh.
I also get that, too. Like, I think that I realize now that the connection that I had with my dad was if I could make my dad laugh, that was such a real, you can't fake it, right? Like that, I mean, you know if somebody's not really laughing. And if I can make my dad laugh in a real way and connect with him in that way, that's like a real emotional connection,
mm-hmm.
you know, if they sort of commit. And so I understand that. Like that's something that's very, very, Sean, you know, you could hear your dad laugh too, but like, but in the sound of like, as it's kind of fading away in a car, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah, he was real sweet.
And with maybe a bottle being thrown out the window.
Oh, Sean, I don't know the story, but.
No, it's uplifting.
He left when I was five.
Oh,
but so it's just so similar to yours. So, but it sounded like your dad was loved to be the audience while you loved to be the performer. And in that sense, who are you to your kids? Are you a little bit of both?
I'm not the performer in front of my kids. I am the audience for sure. I don't, mm-hmm. they don't know that side of me yet. Matter of fact.
How old are they?
4 and 7. My youngest son the other night, I was tucking him in bed, and I don't know if he knows what I do for a living, but he goes, "Hey, Dad," he's got a weird accent. "Hey, Dad, have you ever met Hitler in a movie?" I said,
"No way."
"Hitler?" He goes, "Yeah, you ever met Hitler?" I go, "No." He goes, there's a long pause. He goes, "He's a pretty weird guy."
Oh, I love that homeschooling you're doing up there.
Homeschooling?
Mm-hmm. You guys are just into world history right about now?
He's got a, my youngest son, I mean, they both have this, you know, kids are funny, I think, naturally, but my youngest one has this way about him that I think he's writing jokes very early in life. Again, I'm tucking him in bed the other night. My wife comes in.
And he says, hey, Dad, you ever meet Göring, Hermann Göring? Jesus Christ.
Did you ever get a chance to pal around with Goebbels? My wife comes in to say goodnight to our youngest son, and my youngest son goes, "Hey, Mom, leave us alone. It's just me and Daddy want to talk." And she goes, "Okay." And she turns around to leave, and he goes, "I like the back of your head."
Oh. Wow.
Right? That's a pretty great joke.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's a pretty great joke.
So, Zach, I was just going to say this. So you do all this stuff, and then you're kind of figuring out what's going to, like everybody else, like you kind of alluded to, like you're not getting work, and then you are, and we all know how this is, and especially early on, you're kind of, you're trying to pay the bills. So you do what you can, and stuff comes along, and I already mentioned we met during that this kids movie, and then all of a sudden you do, what is it, 2008, 2009, you do The Hangover, and it kind of changes everything. Your life kind of changes. A lot of people know who you are already, and you're a very popular stand-up, and you're quite well known, but The Hangover kind of takes everything to a different level. Mm-hmm. Truly, what was that experience like? How did you notice that shift in your life?
Well, as far as when we were filming the movie, I remember we were at dinner, and I said to those guys, "Hey, this movie seems pretty good." And I've never had that feeling before in anything I've worked on.
So not on G-Force?
Oh, God. I'll never forget on G-Force. I'd already been working, talking to popsicle sticks for 3 weeks next to a green screen. Yep. And Will comes in, Will comes into work, hotshot Will. And I tell Will, I go, "Look, just as a warning, don't do any of your bits because these people, they have no sense of humor. They're just not going to like it."
Really?
Within 5 minutes, he had everyone eating out of his hand. Everyone dying laughing at what Will was saying. And I could not get them to laugh for 3 weeks.
You thought it was a problem with the audience. I got it.
It was all me.
I should have been Zach's agent. I come in and we're working downtown and he's like riding his bike to some shithole hotel in downtown LA. And I'm like, "Dude, what are you doing?" No, I go, "No, you're moving hotels. Remember I got you moved?
That's
moved
right.
To where I was staying. Do you remember that?"
That's right.
I was
right.
Like, "You can't. You got to treat yourself better. They got to treat you better."
That's right. And they offered me a teleprompter on that movie.
Oh, no.
It was.
Oh, were you struggling? Well, were there a lot of monologues for you on G-Force, Sarah?
Well, none of it made sense. I mean,
I know.
It was a fantastical kids movie that the dialogue didn't really matter. And I can't memorize things that aren't.
That don't matter.
Right.
Yeah. When you're talking to a hamster, it's hard to link thoughts together.
No, Jason, you have to understand, Zach and I found out late in the game, this is true. The director told us one night, I think, he said, we were like, "How'd you come up with the idea for this movie?" And he said that his 9-year-old son's idea. And then we're like, "Oh, great. We're doing a movie that was written by a 9-year-old.
I'd love to see Zach's son pitch out with the sequel with the other kid. Maybe the hamsters save Eastern Europe.
Sure.
My sons will go nowhere near show business. You understand me?
Oh, wow. Took a turn.
Bateman's gunning for him. So wait, so Zach, you do the movie, you do all this stuff, and then you start doing The Hangover, and you say to the guys, "This feels different."
Yeah, so I kind of felt that this seemed, not that it would be big, but it would be something that was funny and kind of fresh. But then the movie came out and it seemed more people can recognize your face. And that's an interesting thing to navigate because it's an asymmetrical relationship. And if you know who you are already, because I was an older dude, and I wasn't too good with the being known stuff. And looking back, I'm kind of embarrassed by how I was not good with it. I was threatened by it, I think.
How are you threatened by it?
Well, first of all, I'm of the mind there is no culture in celebrity culture, right? So I already know that going in. And that whole idea of it and the worship of it is why we ended up with that, you know, Will's favorite president. So yeah.
You voted for him 4 times.
Yeah, weird.
4 times. Was there anything about it that you were like, oh, well, actually, this is not bad? Like, could you get a table at a restaurant you always wanted to get into? Did you have a quick conversation with somebody who you admired and you didn't have to, and they wanted to talk to you? Like, some people find certain things about it, obviously the money and all that kind of crap, but was there anything about it that you were like, oh, if it was just this, that would be great?
You know, I'm pretty grateful for it all now because it was an exciting thing to go through. But the privacy thing is,
yeah,
you know, that's the only bummer of it is. And I'm not really one to go to restaurants and get a nice table and do that anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
So it was a shift. It was just a shift. And people also thought I was that character.
Right. Or expecting you to be funny right. all the time.
Yeah, and right. to be a wild and crazy dude. And I have been in the past a bit, but I'm not like that. So it was just a process. But now it's, like I said, I'm a little embarrassed how I kind of was angry at that.
But it's understandable because it pushes you out of your comfort. If you're not naturally a ham, if you don't naturally are attracted to the center of the stage, then it is immediately an imposition because you lose your anonymity. You can't disappear in a crowd.
Jason, that most people think if you're an actor, there's only one type of actor, right? Which is the center of attention,
right.
which is, you know, and a lot some right. of us are just not that.
And there is a difference, yeah.
But it's not just the center of the stage. I mean, you are a performer and but you want to do it under the conditions that are, you know,
that you control.
Yeah. But when you walk home and you're walking to the store or you're doing whatever, that shouldn't count. It feels like that's part of the agreement. Like, hey, fuck, hang on a second. This wasn't part of the deal. And unfortunately, once you get to a certain place, it is the deal. Right.
It is the deal, but you can't, you have to know at this point, everybody can read and has a TV and the internet and social media that you know that's part of the deal when you get into it. You can't not know that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, but you can't control the level of exposure and notoriety that you're going to get. You know, Zach felt like he was in the middle of a really good movie. He had no idea whether it was going to be a huge commercial right. success or not. The fact that it was meant he lost his anonymity. And it seems like your whole performance draw, what you'd like to do, it has a very sort of democratic equality type of thing. And when you're on stage doing stand-up, you're with the people. You're not up there telling them what's funny. You're kind of, it seems like you're in, there's an equality with your presence with the audience, as opposed to I am above you, almost literally and figuratively, giving you comedy and you better laugh at it. So
yeah, that's more of a confidence thing that I've never felt comfortable with, even knowing what I'm talking about in any situation. But going back to the kind of being known thing, the other thing is that, and I always make a joke that, you know, nobody walks up to me that has a Dr. Smock on. It's always somebody with a Who Farted t-shirt. You know, but it's also the interaction that I get is probably different interaction than, you know, a lot of actor types get, which is, this is all true. I mean, I've had people come up to me and go, I'm so sorry to say this, but has anyone ever told you look like Zach Galifianakis?
Sure. Apologies first.
I love how they try to soften it for, I'm so sorry.
Sure. Yeah.
Back in the 90s, Pepsi and Coca-Cola were in a heated race to try and win loyal customers by any means necessary. But when Pepsi launched an ambitious promotion that encouraged people to buy Pepsi and redeem points for prizes, they overlooked their own fine print in a major way. I'm Misha Brown, and I'm the host of Wondery's podcast, The Big Flop. Every week, guests join me to chronicle one of the biggest pop culture fails of all time. Like, who at Pepsi thought it would be a good idea to advertise that people could earn enough points to redeem a military jet as a prize? They never imagined somebody might actually try to snag it. But a 23-year-old did, and suddenly, Pepsi owed him a jet. Follow the Big Flop on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to the Big Flop early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Hello, I'm Johnny Knoxville.
And I'm Elna Baker, and we have a new podcast. It's called Pretty Sure I Can Fly.
Yep, we've teamed up with my friends and barmates from Smartless to create a podcast where we talk to folks who have more balls in a bowling alley.
People who accomplished something extraordinary despite people telling them that it couldn't or shouldn't be done.
You'll hear stories about the Air Force doctor who buckled into a 600-mile-per-hour rocket sled and became the fastest man on the planet.
And a man who wrestles alligators and sharks for fun.
Do not do this.
You'll hear about a foul-mouthed moonshiner.
Got a 2-inch dick and a 6-inch tongue and knows how to use both of them.
And an even more foul-mouthed female stunt pilot. We got bull riders.
Balloonists.
Bobsledders.
And big wave surfers. People who lay their balls on an anvil and hand the other fella the hammer.
Okay. I bet you've actually done that, Johnny.
Maybe for sweeps. Follow Pretty Sure I Can Fly on the Wondery app.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.
You can listen to Pretty Sure I Can Fly early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid.
We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I'd just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity, that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker lied.
Like a liar.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
Get to the chopper. I'll be back. Listen, I gotta tell you, of all guests we've had on SmartList, I don't know if we've had a bigger icon on our podcast than Arnold Schwarzenegger. I mean, what a treat it was talking to that guy. Arnold is an inspiration, from having reached the heights of bodybuilding to then conquer Hollywood and become a global movie star. Oh, and for his third act, he oversaw the world's fifth largest economy as governor of California. The man has truly done it all. In our interview, he shares the secret of how he's able to accomplish what he puts his mind to, what motivates him to keep working out all these years, and the extreme generosity that he received after arriving in America. You gotta listen to this episode to hear what it's like to be Chris Pratt's father-in-law and how Arnold's first comedy, Twins, has made him more money than any other film he's done. Hint, he's also a great businessman. Give it a listen if you haven't. Bye. Seps.
So, Zach, I'm going to ask you the question that Sean usually asks, and I'm going to take it out of Sean's corner, which is, you know, you're up there, you're up living up in the woods, and you're kind of doing it your way, and it's great. But what now? Like, what do you want to do? Like, what would make you happy? What's the perfect balance? Like, if you could call the shot, and you kind of can, what would you do? Like, what do you want to do? How do you see the next 10 years playing out for you?
You mean as far as showbiz work?
Work and life.
Life. Life I've got figured out. Meaning, I'd love to live in Greece for a while. I'd love to go live in Greece. That's a goal of mine.
Do you enjoy still being an actor and being in the business and working and all that? Or are you just kind of like, it's a hobby now? You know what I mean? Like, some people reach that point where they're like, you know, I've worked my ass off. I staked my claim. And now I don't have the fire in the belly as much. Or maybe you do.
Well, I think to me, Sean, I've always been kind of, or of late, I've been mystified by the, I don't know if it's an American thing of wanting more and more and more. You know what I mean? And like I said earlier, look.
Jesus, you're not even Canadian yet. Just cool it, all right?
Mm-hmm. Well, you will never be accepted in America.
So, I was with Zach when I became an American citizen, and he goes, you'll never be American.
Never. Never. So go worship that queen or whatever it is you Canadians are into.
Wait, you live there. Now you're shitting on it?
Do you have Canadian citizenship?
No, it's actually kind of difficult to do it. It's not as easy as you would think. Canada's pretty strict with that.
So as far as the life to work ratio, the next 10 years would look just like the last 10 years. That's a comfortable balance.
I think for me, I mean, look, I'm real lucky. I would like to continue working here and there in show business. Stand up to me, I can never not do. I love it too much. Mm-hmm. It just is such a therapy, if you will, for me in a weird way. But honestly, I just really love to garden. I love to be in the garden, and I think about shows that maybe I'd like to develop. I'm working on something in my head about a show that's kind of like the Between Two Ferns element, but not the same character, but it's kind of a low-end show like that.
You did Baskets as well, right? Like, how many seasons did you do on Baskets?
Four.
What was
it? It was a great show.
It was a great show.
And you were great in it. Loved you.
Did you like that that schedule? Did you like the way, did that fit your life doing a show like that?
It's a rush. I got so excited every morning when I get up for work, and I've always had that with acting. I have always gotten up very eager to go to work. I have to say that. I mean, that part of it is so energetic, and I love it. And I make fun of actors a lot, but I really do love actors. I do. And that whole creative process on Baskets and the family, you know, when you work on a show and you like the people around you and you don't want that to end?
No, I don't. No, I don't. No, and I've worked with both these guys on shows, and I don't fucking know that yet.
You're looking at the clock waiting for it to end.
So, you know, that element of it. I mean, I guess, yeah, you guys know how it is. I mean, that part of it is so, we're so lucky to be able to goof off and get, you know, make a living of it.
Yeah. I remember, Jason, do you remember, like, I drive on a set at Fox. This is the most I ever had closest to that was driving onto the Fox lot every morning to do Arrested Development. And every day, like, putting my fucking pass on the thing and thinking, like, God, I'm so happy. There wasn't a day that I drove onto the lot and thought, oh, man, I got to get through today. Like, not one.
Yeah.
And I miss that because you have those moments now. And maybe I'm older, or maybe because I look at a lot of things as taking me away from my kids or spending time with the kids. I kind of like sometimes I have a tough time. There's like this kind of adversarial position between my work and my life. And I get bummed out sometimes. And so that, you know, if I stay late or whatever, I'm like, you fuckers, I want to be home, you know? Mm-hmm.
I didn't know you were on Arrested Development.
Yeah. He played the older brother, right? Weren't you the oldest, Will? Hmm. I'm pretty sure you were the oldest. Hmm.
Who did you used to look up to? Who were the people that you, when you were young, before you moved to New York with Miles and Bobby and the whole thing, like, who are the people, comedians or actors or performers, I don't know, just who are your sort of inspirations artistically that you kind of looked at and said, like, I want to do that?
Condi Rice.
Mm-hmm. Condi Rice?
Condi Rice, sure.
Not a lot of people know that she started under Uta Hagen and then went into politics.
Yeah. Well, we were in a improv troupe together called Mission Improvable. that's how we first met. I was influenced. Eddie Murphy, Bill Murray. Then later in life, you know, it was kind of more esoteric type of performers. But I have to say, and I tell people this, I was more influenced by my cousins. And my siblings, or my brother and sister, were funny people, and we would perform a lot. My sister and brother and I would do sketches about the Iran-Contra. You know, we would watch the news and try to do sketches for my parents. So I was kind of more influenced by my family, strangely.
Based on the hearings, like the Ollie North hearings of Iran-Contra?
I remember my sister was dressed as the Ayatollah in my mom's robe. Oh my, and I was a reporter. I can't remember exactly what, but my family always, we're pretty much news junkies. But also, you do remember the show Shields and Yarnell?
Of course, always. Sean. All the robots, yeah, I loved it.
So I used to copy their sketches when they would do the robot.
All the time. I did it all the time. By the way, during the pandemic, if somebody comes in, I go, do you have a Shields and Yarnell? I would say that all the time. And people would be like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. So they were great, and they were a mime act.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so hearing all that, so what, I don't know, what was your favorite, like, what's your favorite movie of all time?
Yeah.
All bits aside.
Hangover 3.
Yeah.
growing up, I know that I'd never really seen anything like Spinal Tap before. Mm-hmm. When I saw that when I was young, mm-hmm. that was pretty, because it was, there was a lot of subtlety to it that,
yeah, no winking.
That to me was very, that movie to me. And then Will, I know you and I've talked about it pretentiously, is With Nell and I.
Yeah.
I mean, I think if people, I think a lot of comedians know it, but I don't know if American movie audiences know, is, but that to me is...
Me too, it's the pinnacle.
I really got to see that film. I've heard you talk about that film for, what, 30 years now, Will, and I've still have not seen it.
It's a perfect film. There's not a wasted moment or scene in that movie. It's really a great balance. It's brilliant writing. Zach knows it too. You guys...
What's it called?
With Nell and I, Richard E. Grant, and it was written by and directed by this guy, Bruce Robinson. It's brilliant. Paul McGann and... But it's such a perfect film, isn't it? Because it's funny and it's really dramatic. And it's quite touching and quite moving as well. Quite tragic.
I can't believe you guys haven't seen that.
No, it's so good. I've never heard of it.
So, Zach, so you're there. We can't access you because you're so far away. But we want you back. We really, mm-hmm. really want you back. How are you going to do – how do you scratch the itch for – stand-up? Because you talk about it as a thing that, like, you – once you get it and you're sort of addicted to it – you are so far up there and you're not living in the city. Like, do you have a hankering to get back out and to get out there and perform, not necessarily in films or whatever, acting, but to do stand up? Like, is that something you're sort of chomping at the bit to do?
Yeah, a bit. I mean, I had this craving the other night that I really needed to kind of try to see if some of the things I've written down would work, even work. And for some stand ups, at least for me, it's not like riding a bike. You need to get your legs again, rhythm, and this is obviously the longest hiatus for so many comics. It'll be interesting to see how much rustiness there will be from comics, or if there's going to be this huge explosion of people just wanting to express themselves, and there's going to be a whole brand of humor that's come up, born out of this. Who knows? But yeah, I feel I would like to get on stage.
But you know, it's funny you talk about getting your sea legs back, because you kind of had this really cool device. You use music, and obviously you're very musical, and you play piano, and you would use piano sometimes as part of your act, right? You sort of play a little bit of piano between jokes.
That's one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
Of course, it's a hilarious bit, but also it must have been really kind of comforting in a certain way, right? Because there's no gaps.
Well, it's a couple of things. So yeah, I start playing piano. And by the way, I don't know how to play. I can't read music. I know how to fake melancholy music. and then that melancholy music juxtaposed to diarrhea jokes.
Sure.
Yes, is, it's the best. It's the best.
It's a combination that I don't know if that's really been done. I don't know. But the other part of it is, on the road, it became limiting, because I would be 20 minutes at the piano telling these one-liners, and there's only one kind of tone you can do there. So I kind of stopped playing the piano with my act, because I just wanted to go explore some other things. The piano is a little limiting that way, especially when you're not musically that inclined, which I'm not.
Well, you could have Sean. Sean could come and accompany you, because he's a pianist.
I just in the background.
Sean, are you classically trained?
Yeah, I thought that was what I was going to do with my life. I studied it about 25 years, 20
no
years.
No kidding.
Years. Yeah.
Incredible. Zach, we've taken...
Go ahead. No, go ahead, please. I think you're going to end
go,
it.
Go.
I was getting ready to go into another boring thing.
You haven't talked to anybody in months. Go ahead, say
one
more
thing.
I know,
this is what I do. I only do podcasts so I can talk to adults.
Sorry about that.
Were you doing podcasts? Yeah, sure. I got a guy called me last week, and this was weird. I picked up my phone. It was a number. This is how lonely I am. I'm answering phone calls. I don't recognize the number. Like, okay, yeah, hello. This is Zach. Can we talk? And so this guy calls me, and he goes, "Hey, Mr. Galifianakis, I wanted to know if you'd be on my podcast." And I went, "Who is this?" And he went into this description of who he was, some guy that has a podcast. And I go, "How did you get my number?" And he goes, "The White Pages."
Oh, no
way.
The White Pages? That doesn't exist anymore, does it?
Up there, I guess.
He was lying. No. It was just funny. He cold called me. No. And I mean, I was pleasant to him, but it was weird that he cold called me to be in his podcast. Maybe I should just do it anyway.
It'd be pretty funny if you fucking did it.
I think I will.
Call him back.
Can I sign you guys up for it, too?
Yeah, of course.
That'd be great.
Of course.
I'll just tell him I can't do it, but I've got Sean Hayes that's dying to do it.
Yeah, I'm in.
Well, fuck, Zach, we won't take up any more of your time.
Thank you so much.
You're such a prince. Thanks, man.
Thanks for having
Very
me.
Very nice of you to do this, Zach.
It's great to see you.
And we'll talk payment.
We'll talk payment. Email me an invoice, all right?
Do you do e-transfers?
Of course.
Yeah,
but we do it through the Caymans. We miss you, man. We'd love to see you back in town at some point. You're the fucking best. You're such a great dude. And so much love to you and the family. And
thanks, guys.
Thanks for doing this, man.
So good to see you, Zach.
Be well.
Yeah, thanks, too, Zach.
Man. All right. Bye, guys.
See you, buddy.
Bye, buddy.
Gosh, that was so fun having Zach on, right? From the wilderness.
Yeah, that is, I got to tell you, it's a real, real fantasy for me. Just kind of, do you guys ever fantasize about just unplugging and just plugging in another place on the big blue ball
all the time
and just kind of starting over?
Yeah, for sure. He's so, like, I don't know him, like, obviously, Will, you know him, but he just seems so down to earth and normal and chill and such a great family man. And yes, and Jason, to your point, I was like, wow, I envy that you could just go up to Canada or whatever country and just kind of check out like that from the business. Yeah.
He pointed out, so his wife is Canadian and obviously as a Canadian, I love how much he embraces Canada.
Yeah.
And really appreciates not just the wilderness, but kind of Canadian sensibility. And which is funny because he used to make fun of me for so many years for being Canadian. Mm-hmm. And then now he's there. And I love it so much. I cherish every time he talks about being Canadian. I'm like, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
You fucking dummy. For years, you fucking clowned me. And now suck it.
Right.
And you know what? Maybe I'll have him kicked out.
Yeah,
maybe I'll have him kicked out.
And it is so flippin' pretty where he is.
It's gorgeous.
I've never been to
British Columbia.
All the eagles and the bears and the fish and it's everything.
It's so spectacular. Well, first of all, the air. You know, you get up there in British Columbia and off the coast.
But like the valley?
It's a little better than the valley. It's kind of like Simi Valley.
Yes.
Like in the summer.
Yes. Yeah.
You know
Granada
I mean?
Hills, Northridge.
Yeah.
Really, yeah. It's lush.
You're just ripping off all the hits from the valley. Granada Hills, Panorama City.
Oh, no, it can't touch Panorama City. That's in a different league.
Yeah, you're
right. But I love him. I'm such a huge fan. He's
such a unique talent, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he's just like, he's done it all.
So dry.
I forgot to ask him about Between Two Ferns. Is that completely done now? He's not doing that anymore, is he?
I think that it'll never be done is kind of probably.
Never be done again? Oh, never be finished.
No, never be finished.
Oh, I hope not.
Yeah, something that great that only comes by like once every 200 years. What's that called?
Oh,
biennial.
You idiot.
Oh.
Smart.
If you like SmartLess, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Behind every successful business is a story, and some of them might surprise you. Like how Chobani's first yogurt factory was discovered on a piece of junk mail, or how the founder of the multi-million dollar cosmetics brand Drunk Elephant was told by everyone, including her own mother, that the name sounded like a dive bar. I'm Guy Raz, and on my show How I Built This, I talk to founders behind the world's biggest companies to learn the real stories of how they built them. In each episode, you'll hear entrepreneurs share moments of doubt and failure and talk about how they were able to overcome them on their way to the top. How I Built This is like a masterclass in innovation and creativity from the people who've done it all. Follow How I Built This wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to How I Built This early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more deep dive and daily business content, listen to Wondery, the destination for business podcasts. With shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, and many more, Wondery means business.